Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia.
For another hour at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show here on Progressive Radio Network. Glad to be with you in the height of the insanity, the primary season. I'm in California. We're looking at the California primary coming up next week. It is really fast and furious here. We're 2 days away from a leap year day. Every 4 years, we get another day, which we need here in California for this incredible primary, Super Tuesday that's coming up. None of us have seen anything like this in our lifetimes. I got to remind you that we did have a very serious, very majorly loved, hugely loved candidate for president of the United States as a socialist 100 years ago. His name was Eugene V. Debs, and it's exactly 100 years ago that Gene Debs ran for president from a jail cell in Atlanta. He was jailed by the jerk, the very worst president we've ever had. Worse than Donald Trump, ladies and gentlemen, worse than Andrew Jackson, worse than Richard Nixon, was Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson was ran for president in 1916. He ran for president in 1912, actually, first and won in a four-way race. And race is the right word because Woodrow Wilson was a brutal white supremacist, an absolute racist, and very, very clear about it, very explicit, big supporter of the Ku Klux Klan. He was, after all, a Southern Democrat, and back then, that meant you were a supporter of the Ku Klux Klan. And Wilson won the election, in, as I was saying, a four-way race. He was vastly outpolled by the combination of Theodore Roosevelt, William Howard Taft, and Gene Debs, the socialist. But he won a plurality enough to get the Electoral College to put him in the White House and proceeded to keep us out of war for 4 years as World War I broke out in Europe. But then after 1916, when he was elected to a second term, he immediately got us into World War I and used it as an excuse to break the Socialist Party. I want to make sure you know we're with the great Clifford Tasner. Clifford, you with us?
I am with you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Well, I am here.
Good.
Delighted to be here.
I want to finish my narrative here about Woodrow Wilson. And you are with the great Americans for Democratic Action, founded by another great American, the most powerful woman as far as I'm concerned, and certainly one of the most powerful figures in all of American history in the 20th century, Eleanor Roosevelt, founder of the Americans for Democratic Action. And Clifford, it's an honor to have you on the show with us. Let me finish my narrative here about Gene Debs and the Socialist Party. Woodrow Wilson came, and we're going to be joined in a couple minutes by Alan Minsky of another great organization for progressive politics here in the United States, Progressive Democrats of America. So we're going to have two leaders of two of the most important progressive organizations in the country on the show at the same time. And Clifford, you and I are in California right now. Alan is also a Los Angeles resident, but I don't know where he is right now. We'll see when he gets on. So, and I'm actually going to finish the discussion of Woodrow Wilson when Alan gets on the phone. So we will pick it up in 1916 when Alan Minsky joins us. Clifford, tell us a bit about Americans for Democratic Action what you're doing, and also you have some endorsements you want to tell us about. So lead us in here. What is Americans for Democratic Action, and what are you doing in this all-important 2020 election campaign?
All right. So Americans for Democratic Action, as you mentioned, was founded by Eleanor Roosevelt in 1947, and we are a multi-issue left progressive organization. We're a national organization. I'm not only the president of the Southern California chapter, I'm the secretary of the national organization. And I'm very proud to say that Americans for Democratic Action has endorsed Bernie Sanders for president.
Really?
We did it in 2016.
Fantastic.
We've done it again because, okay. You know, and I have to say this, you know, I've been an activist my whole adult life. I'm a middle-aged man, and I've been working so hard for so many quixotic efforts. This is the closest we've ever come to having somebody who supports all of the issues that I care deeply about, who really has a shot at not only becoming the candidate, but actually being elected president of the United States. It's unbelievable. You know, I was born in 1963, and you know, consciously, we've never had a good president since I've been, you know. I mean, Obama was a good spokesperson. I mean, he was very eloquent, but he was a corporate Democrat. You know, every president we've had has been a woeful disappointment. It might be an incredible experience to wake up and say, wow, I'm so proud to be in the country that elected Bernie Sanders to be president. It's an extraordinary prospect. I hope we're able to pull it off and, you know, Trump doesn't urge all of his followers to take to the streets with their guns and start shooting us down. Really, I know that sounds grim, but I can imagine it happening. I bet I'm not the only one who has imagined that happening.
So no, I think
so at ADA, we are on the ground, we're canvassing, we're phone banking, we're a number of, I'd like to mainly talk about a few races that I think are very important here in Southern California, if we could.
Go ahead.
There are a number of our congressional representatives that are really underwhelming centrists who do nothing to further our goals as progressives. I'll give an example. In District 29, we've got Tony Cardenas, and he's never met a corporate donation he didn't love, and so he's being opposed by Angelica Duenas, and she is a, you know, lefty progressive and stands with us on all the issues. Now, she doesn't have the money he has. He's got a huge political machine behind him. But I think it's really important to back and support.
Okay, we're joined by Alan.
I'm sorry.
Alan Minsky, you're with us? Hello?
Yeah, hello?
Clifford, you're with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, Alan Minsky. All right.
Great. Hey, well, great to join you. And first, let me tell Cliff Tasner that he's a great video maker, and we're going to be getting his stuff posted on Reddit, Facebook, and we're going to blast him out all over the country. We're just
waiting.
Yeah, no, it'll all be happening. It's a great stuff. People should check out the beautiful videos that have been done, and so, you know, they really reach out to multilingual communities across the country in support of Senator Bernie Sanders.
Well, the Korean one is going to be done today, and the Arabic one should be done tomorrow, Alan.
That's amazing. Wait, the Korean one is done already?
Yeah, it's just about done. We have to tweak one thing in terms of the volume of the track. But the song is really beautiful in Korean. And the thing is, nobody's reaching out to these language communities. You know, even the campaign,
right.
Bernie's got a lot going on. But they haven't had the bandwidth to focus on that. And tonight we're going to be in Anaheim filming a bunch of Arab people. And, you know, we have a very important message. Each of these videos basically says, we are part of the fabric of this nation, and we are part of this movement to elect Bernie Sanders president.
Okay, so
you know,
they're
amazing videos.
I'd like you to finish your discussion of who you're.
Oh yeah, okay. So,
and then we're going to go in. What we're going to do here is I am going to finish. Cliff. Hold on a second. What we're going to do is I'm going to finish when you finish talking about who you're supporting. We'll get back to Woodrow Wilson because Alan has joined us. So go ahead, Clifford, finish your who ADA is supporting in Southern California.
Okay, so CJ running against Brad Sherman in the West Valley, also an incredible progressive, and also Jimmy Gomez is another corporate centrist in District 34, and Francis Motewala is running against him. And then the really important race, you know, one of them is that we really need to get Jackie Lacey out of there. She's the Los Angeles district attorney who has never prosecuted a cop who has gunned down an unarmed civilian. And so our organization is supporting George Gascon. A lot of people are supporting Rachel Rossi. And the one other really important race that I think is everybody needs to pay attention to, Los Angeles has more charter schools than anywhere else in the country. The charter school industry really has taken over our school board, and recently we took it back when we elected Jackie Goldberg. We re-elected her to the school board, and here's the thing. Four progressive charter, you know, pro-teacher, anti-charter school candidates are running for school board, and you're seeing millions of dollars being spent by the charter school industry to run the most shameful, egregious, you know, just disgusting mailing campaign. I think people need to know that every time you go to your mailbox, when you see all those flyers, just take them, don't read them, put them in the recycling bin immediately. But we're supporting Patricia Castellanos, Jackie Goldberg, George McKenna, and Scott Schmirlson. All of them are advocates for public education, advocates for students, and advocates for unionized teachers. And this is a really important school race. If any of them lose, the charter school industry has a advantage on the school board, and they're not going to be accountable. They're not going to be, their books aren't going to be opened up. There's not going to be any kind of scrutiny and transparency in how they do business, and we really need to put a stop to that. So that's
all right. So this is going on all over the country, of course. We're not just limited to Southern California, but the ADA, Americans for Democratic Action, led here in Southern California by Clifford Tassner, who's one of our guests, and the other guest was who has just joined us is the great Alan Minsky. Both of you guys have been on my show before. I love having my regulars because we always have a great conversation. So I am now, Clifford, is there anything else you want to add to that?
I think that's enough for now. That's a lot to digest. Okay. But, you know, if we're going to talk nationally, let's make sure we talk about Bernie Sanders and how important this race is.
Well,
you know, we're always saying
this is... Yes, Alan Minsky, are you back in Southern California here?
I am in Southern California. I am no longer out traveling the country. Obviously, I wish I was in South Carolina.
We have a major primary coming up on March 3rd here in California, part of Super Tuesday. I am looking at the emblematic article of the election era so far on the front page of the New York Times. The headline is Democratic Leaders Willing to Risk Party Damage to Stop Bernie Sanders. This is on the front page of the New York Times. Everybody listening in, you two guys, if you're in front of your screens, you may want to call it up. It's by Lisa Lehrer and Reed J. Epstein. And the basic story is, and this is the story of the 2020 primaries, is what the Democratic Party leadership is willing to do, so-called leadership, is willing to do to prevent Bernie Sanders from being the nominee. So let me finish my story with Woodrow Wilson and the history of the socialists in this country, Socialist Party, because it's exactly 100 years that we had the definitive election in 1920. What happened in the mid-1910s is that in 1912, you had a rising socialist party led by Eugene V. Debs, the great labor leader from Indiana, tremendously charismatic, a beautiful, beautiful guy, completely, like Bernie, incorruptible. And people just loved to hear him speak, and he would come by the thousands on virtually no notice. He had been imprisoned earlier in Woodstock, Illinois, of all places, because he led a national rail strike that shut down the entire railway system in the United States. While he was in prison, he converted to socialism. He argued that money was not a worthy basis of our civilization. If you want to read truly great speeches, very few speakers or writers in our history have been on the level of Eugene V. Debs. He's right up there with Lincoln and other speakers that I can't even think of another one. Well, Eleanor Roosevelt, who had the incredible ability to articulate the deepest humanitarian and humanistic beliefs. Debs was a complete rock star. There's never been a labor leader in our country with more a deeper following. People just absolutely loved him, and when you read his speeches, you'll understand why. He did not run for president. He worked so hard and was on the road all the time that his health really deteriorated. In 16. He did not run for president. He had run in 1900, 1904, 1908, and 1912. In 1916, he did not run for president. He ran for Congress in his hometown of Terre Haute, where everybody loved and knew Eugene V. Debs. And his race for Congress, he officially got zero votes. And you want to talk about election theft and election fraud, look at the congressional election in Terre Haute, Indiana in 1916. And it would have made a great difference, actually, if Debs had been in Congress. Because in 1916, Woodrow Wilson ran for president on the slogan, "He kept us out of war." And then he immediately got us into World War One. Absolutely no reason to do it, based on a lie. A passenger ship, the Lusitania, had been sunk by the Germans going from New York to London. They claimed that it was carrying weapons and that it would, under the rules of war, barbaric as it was, they were allowed to sink it because it was carrying weapons. Wilson denied it, went completely crazy, assaulted the Germans. And then, of course, 70 years later, deep sea divers found the Lusitania, and it was, in fact, carrying weapons. Wilson used World War One as an excuse to crush the Socialist Party. And we have to say, and this is a leading up to Bernie Sanders, Eugene V. Debs is Bernie Sanders' personal hero. And the American Socialist Party, which had a very, very advanced, sophisticated platform, was far more committed to the Bill of Rights of the United States Constitution than either the Democrats or the Republicans. The American Socialists were completely committed to free speech, a free press, the right to not go into the military, the right of every human being to a decent life. And if you read the Socialist Party platforms, you'll see that they are far superior to anything the Republicans or the Democrats have come up with. But the Woodrow Wilson, as they say, my least favorite president, as far as I'm concerned, the worst president in all of U.S. history, put Gene Debs in prison in Atlanta, in federal prison. He was in his 60s. Already, and his health suffered greatly. And in 1920, exactly 100 years ago this year, Gene Debs ran for president of the United States from a jail cell in a federal prison in Atlanta. He was counted with 900,000 votes. I'm sure he got way more than that. Now we have another socialist running for president. Bernie Sanders has actually gotten, in the primaries in 2016, he got more than 10 times as many votes as Gene Debs did way back in 1916 and again in 1920. We know that Bernie Sanders is far more committed to the Bill of Rights. The American socialists all these years have been far more democratic socialists and social democrats and far more committed to the Bill of Rights than anybody in the Republican or the Democratic Party, for that matter. And now we're seeing another assault on Bernie Sanders. Many of us believe that Sanders was the rightful nominee in 1916, and now we see the leadership of the Democratic Party freaking out. Here we are in California, no other way to put it. They are freaking out over the possibility that Bernie Sanders will come into the Democratic Convention with at least a plurality of delegates. And the question now is, what happens if Bernie Sanders comes into the Democratic National Convention with a majority of the voters, but not a majority of the delegates? And this is the story on the front page of the New York Times, but it's been the sub-narrative of the entire campaign. And Alan Minsky, we'll let you jump in here on this. What's going to happen here? I will say one thing, and I want to get this in here. I was surprised to see in this New York Times piece that the alternative they're mentioning to Bernie Sanders, if Sanders comes into the convention with a majority of the voters but not a majority of the Democrats, the Democratic candidate that they're talking about to run in his place to be elected by the superdelegates would be Sherrod Brown of Ohio. I am shocked to see that. But, Alan, take it away. And then, Cliff, you'll jump in after Alan. What's going on here?
Oh, okay, there are a few things. My mind is primarily focused on arguments as to why Bernie Sanders should be voted for by anybody who's voting in the Democratic primaries or caucuses. But to entertain your question, let me first tackle the Sherrod Brown component. I think the reason that Brown has been pointed to is that he didn't run at all, right? So Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris, two candidates that the establishment of the party feels are to the left of the center of the establishment, ran and did not do well. Warren, though, that's not entirely determined yet, but it seems to be the case. Therefore, the fact that Sanders defeated them makes them very tainted in terms of being somebody who can be proposed to replace Sanders. Now, Sherrod Brown, per his policy positions and votes as a senator, sort of slots in a little bit to the right of Elizabeth Warren, but to the left of, say, Harris and Booker, and generally was spoken of as one of the five or six actual progressives in the U.S. Senate. So that's the other reason that I think his name is being floated, is the idea that he would be more palatable to the plurality of delegates that Sanders would have, the Sanders movement, than other proposals. I think anyone other than Bernie Sanders, if he has a plurality of delegates going into the convention, will really create havoc within the Democratic Party. It's very, very difficult to win the majority of votes, and we know this well from California, where there are races where if you win a majority of votes in various civic elections, you can pull it off. It's very hard when there's not an incumbent to achieve that. So Sanders will have basically defeated all the candidates and won the election and be denied the opportunity to be the nominee. So even if it's not being denied the nominee for the purposes of anointing a far-right Democrat like Michael Bloomberg or a center-right Democrat like Joe Biden, to do someone who's center-left, I do not think will sit well. And, of course, there's a lot of reasons for classic, you know, sort of electioneering strategy as to why it's somewhat ridiculous to take somebody who hasn't been introduced to the national public and foisting them upon the public as the nominee when Bernie Sanders has been so vetted. Of course, if it all does come to this, what the establishment will argue is Sanders knew the rules. He had to get to 50 plus one and he didn't get there. What does seem, you know, there still is the matter of Elizabeth Warren's relationship to all of this. She still is a live candidate. And if she and Sanders do add up to 50 plus one, there certainly will be the opportunity for Sanders to offer Warren a position, maybe the vice presidency, in order to get to 50 plus one. But there's a lot of evidence to suggest that Elizabeth Warren may not be receptive to that. But time will tell all of this. It's speculative. And, of course, this does have echoes with what went on in the Republican race in 2016 with Donald Trump. Of course, the Republican Party is, on paper, substantially more small-D Democratic than the Democratic Party, most notably in the complete absence of superdelegates when it comes to the nomination process. So Trump didn't have to contend with that, and as you will recall, as much as the Republican establishment was appalled by Trump, he consolidated and was able to win the majority of the delegates leading into the convention. Though I do believe Ted Cruz, who was in second, was reluctant, was hoping for some deus ex machina sort of phenomenon to occur that would allow him to be anointed over Trump, but of course that didn't happen. Trump had the majority of delegates going into the Cleveland convention, and he won. But I would also posit that, you know, if you look at the Tea Party and the what was being, you know, sort of put forward by the Tea Party in 2010 through up to 2016, there actually was a lot more resonance with that majoritarian strain within the Republican Party that was accepted by the party elites as part of the coalition in Donald Trump than there is with Sanders. I mean, if you do look at the elected members of Congress who share Sanders' politics, you see that, you know, the Sherrod Browns, the Elizabeth Warrens are to the right of Bernie Sanders. The only people who are really with Sanders, a very small subset
you know, 15 to 20 members of the House of Representatives, maybe Jeff Merkley in the Senate. And that's a lot fewer elected officials whose politics resonate with Sanders' politics than would be the case with Donald Trump and the Congressional Caucus of the Republican Party going into 2016. So the establishment will fight it. They'll try to steal it from. What's necessary is to go in with a majority of people supporting Sanders.
Okay. Cliff Kasner?
And that if this were any other presidential year, we'd be so grateful to have Liz Warren or even a Sherrod Brown running for president, you know, because we've been so disappointed by what we've had in the past, just a whole rogues gallery of very centrist corporate Democrats, you know. I mean, really stretching back, I mean, Jimmy Carter was a centrist. Walter Mondale really ran as a centrist. Mike Dukakis ran as a centrist. Bill Clinton succeeded because Ross Perot was running and he got a plurality. You know, Obama didn't run as a centrist. He ran as a progressive and then immediately brought in Rahm Emanuel and all the Clinton's Wall Street criminals and cronies. But if this were any other year, this would be a great, great time for any of these people. We'd be grateful on the left to have somebody who even, like, heard some of our issues, although Sherrod Brown has come out against Medicare for All, so the insurance companies will be much more comfortable with him. But the problems facing our society, problems facing our America and our world right now are so great that there's not a single candidate who is bought and paid for by corporations can succeed in achieve, you know, in resolving them. Where any candidate who takes money from the insurance companies is not going to solve health care, nor will one who takes money from the pharmaceutical companies. Anybody who's taking money from the fracking industry or the oil industry, the petrochemical industry, is not going to solve global, you know, climate change. And so somebody who's taking money from the banks is not going to solve student loan problems. And the thing that makes Bernie such a compelling candidate is that he has a movement behind him. You know, a lot of these people are just hoping to govern, you know. Let's say we elect Liz Warren president, and she has a plan for that. But it's not going to get through Congress or the Senate without being just eviscerated and turned into something that, you know, won't be recognizable to those of us who might have supported that plan. You know, Bernie's strategy, because he's part of the movement, he's part of the same movement that the Sunrise Movement, our revolution, you know, PDA, ADA, you know, the nurses. We're all trying to work together toward these goals. And, you know, Bernie is somebody who's grounded by that. He's absolutely a part of that. And his strategy of getting people out in the streets to make change happen is the only way that we can achieve any of this. And I look back at Franklin Delano Roosevelt for a parallel, because Roosevelt was pro-union at a time when unions were really agitating aggressively for changes in the way they were treated. I would also argue that Roosevelt did the bare minimum necessary to prevent a Bolshevik revolution in this country, given what was going on. But that said, he was supportive of the unions who were on strike, and as a result, workers managed to get management to shake in their boots and soil their pants and get a lot of changes made that made capitalism at least less egregious than it had been. So, you know, if we want to talk about it, not only is Bernie the candidate who could beat Trump, Bernie's the candidate who actually has a shot at getting some of these things done by really mobilizing and organizing the American people who stand for the same issues he cares about, which is the majority of us, to fight for these things. And anybody else who's running for this office, Obama ran for the office talking about, you know, be the wind at my back, make me do it. But as soon as he got into office, they pulled the plug on organizing for America. You know, Rahm Emanuel, you know, took over the White House. They had a press secretary, had nothing but complete open hostility toward, open hostility toward progressives, and he didn't govern as a centrist. Bernie will. I mean, as a progressive, Bernie will govern as a progressive. Bernie will be the wind at his back, and he'll be the wind at our backs to keep fighting together. So I'm very hopeful about what that could presage for America.
Fantastic. With two of the great activist leaders in this country, Clifford Kasner from the Southern California Americans for Democratic Action, and Alan Minsky, the executive director of Progressive Democrats of America. So I'm going to put something out here there are two serious problems. I mean, I love Bernie Sanders, I love how he's completely flummoxed the talking heads and really really flushed out MSNBC and CNN for their essential corporatism. I mean, Chris Matthews has made a total fool of himself, and so have a lot of other these Trump-hating so-called liberal talking heads who, when confronted with someone who really advocates for social change, can't deal with it. And just as the establishment 100 years ago couldn't deal with Gene Debs, who was, like Bernie, absolutely unquestioned in his integrity, in his incorruptibility, in his consistency. And again, if you're going to read anything over the next week or two, go back and read Gene Debs' speeches. They're fantastic and just really show. And Debs has been an inspiration to Bernie, and we know what we're dealing with Bernie Sanders, and that's why these talking heads can't deal with him. I mean, it's quite amazing. So the two things that Bernie has going against him as a candidate are, one, he's Jewish, and I do not, as a Jew, I am highly skeptical that the country will elect a Jew. I may be wrong. It hasn't happened before. You know, I ask people all the time when you're talking about Buttigieg, who is the country less likely generically to elect, a Jew or a gay guy? And at this point, I don't know if it's a toss-up or whatever, but that's you know, non-ideologically, that's something to think of. And then Bernie's age. He is 78. I'm 74. I can't imagine being President of the United States at this age, but Bernie has shown incredible stamina and, just astounding ability to proceed despite his age. We've got to remember that Trump is also old, and God, Joe Biden has belonged on a... Yes, Michael Bloomberg, and so...
New York with a terrible record on race and gender... being president and lots of money. You know.
Well, that is why I was shocked this morning, shocked, as they say in Casablanca, to see the mention of Sherrod Brown. And so, okay, we're gonna stick with Bernie. I'll stick with Bernie. You guys are gonna stick with Bernie, yes. But there needs to be a backdoor discussion about Sherrod Brown, because a year ago, I'm from Ohio. I know Sherrod Brown personally. And of all the people that the Democratic establishment could come up with as an alternative to Bernie Sanders, Sherrod Brown is personally and politically, in my mind, the most palatable. And I just watched this astounding movie, which everyone needs to see. I'm sure you guys have seen it or you know of it, called American Factory. It's made by Julia Reichert, who's from Dayton. And it's yes.
Talented young composer, excellent.
Well, I don't know if you guys have seen the movie, but it is a staggeringly brilliant movie and one of the most important movies I've seen in a long, long time. A, because it talks about labor issues in a gritty, gutsy, totally realistic way, which you never see in American films. And B, it is the most terrifying exercise in contrasting and understanding the differences between Chinese culture and American culture and what we are in for, because you cannot see this movie and not understand that the Chinese are completely about to take over the world, and that our way of being and our way of work and the American ethos is completely obsolete. I mean, this film is staggering. And ironically, in the middle of the film, and like I said, I've known Sherrod Brown a long time, he is in there. And the situation is that they're opening a factory. The Chinese have bought a General Motors factory that's gone out in Dayton. And as the Ohio senator, Sherrod Brown comes to the opening. And he does an amazing thing. At the end of his speech, he advocates for union, which completely flips the Chinese out. And, it was a beautiful moment. I was extremely proud of him. Now, if, God forbid, they do this to Bernie, which they are clearly gearing up to do, preventing him from getting a nomination, I didn't think that the mainstream Democrats would go far enough left to bring in Sherrod Brown and to talk about him. But of all the people that could handle such a situation, and that might be palatable. And again, I don't want to get ahead of the narrative here, but you know, you guys are leaders, and this is a radio show that people listen to get this kind of information. Sherrod Brown is a very, very interesting choice. Yes, he's to the right of Bernie. He's probably a little to the right of Elizabeth, although I'm not really sure about that. Because unlike Elizabeth Warren, Sherrod Brown has very, very deep roots in the American labor movement. You know, he has always, as an Ohio senator, been right there with the unions. And he's been pretty progressive on social issues. And he's a good guy. I mean, which means a lot. He's not a jerk. So, and his wife, by the way, I'm sure you're aware, his wife is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. So let's hear you guys. I have more to say about Sherrod Brown.
I want to point out that Americans for Democratic Action 2 years ago honored Sherrod Brown and gave him an Eleanor Roosevelt Award in Washington. But, you know, and he's a great guy, and he's pro-union. And I think that it's really about the math. I think that if Bernie only shows up with a plurality of 25%, and they find someone else who's a candidate that can bridge the gap between the corporatists and the progressives, it would be easier to swallow. But if Bernie shows up at the convention with 45% of the votes, or just shy of the majority that he'd need, and they force someone else down our throats, I can promise you that while maybe progressive Democrats will accept Sherrod Brown, the thing that Bernie's trying to do is bring in the 100 million people who don't vote and have given up on the political process. And this kind of thing of working so hard to make Bernie president, a lot of these people, you know, and I saw it last time, a lot of people got engaged in the political process who never were engaged before. And when we saw the election with the Democratic National Committee with its thumb on the scale, we saw how that election went. And a lot of people who got very excited then went back to sleep because they came to the conclusion, and it's not an invalid conclusion, that there's absolutely nothing you can do because the system is broken and it's bought and paid for and completely corrupt. And so they went away. And those are the people we need in the political process. If the Democratic Party foists anyone else down our throats who is not Bernie, if Bernie has almost a majority, you're going to see a substantial number of people not be engaged for the election. And I know Donald Trump, bad. He's a very bad man. He's trying to build an authoritarian regime. They're right now purging the executive branch of anybody that he considers to be disloyal. He's accelerating climate change. He's supporting dictatorships all over the world. He's a terrible man. But you know what? People don't get out and vote for a negative. They vote for a positive. And if people worked really hard to get Bernie to that point, and Bernie is almost there in terms of pledged delegates, and someone else is thrust into the mix, and Bernie is denied this, you're going to see millions of people give up on the process and not participate. And I'll tell you, Trump will win. Trump will win. You know, if it's not Bernie, I don't think Bernie's the only one who can beat Trump. And part of that is because he engages a lot of people who would not otherwise be engaged.
Alan?
I have a ton to say, but I have to ask to speak in a minute. So, Harvey, your thoughts first.
No, I want to hear yours. I gave you my. I think. Well, okay, fair enough. If they deny a Bernie denomination, which is a high likelihood, I think that Sherrod Brown is the one guy who might be able to pull it off. He does carry Ohio, and he's a decent guy. I'll have to tell you. You guys haven't seen this piece in the New York Times. You want to guess who they're talking about, the vice president?
I have seen it, Harvey, and they also talked about Michelle Obama being his vice president. I look at this article, and I think it's rather reprehensible. And I don't know if Sherrod Brown is considering this, but we live in a democracy. The party's called the Democratic Party. And I do think that, you know, Sherrod Brown, who is a friend of PDA's and a very close friend of our former interim executive director and our founding executive director, I've only met Sherrod Brown a couple times. I have friends who are friends with both him and his wife. I think he'll be opening himself up to a world of contempt from the grassroots. And I can understand that. I do think that Donald Trump needs to be defeated, and heading into the election cycle, if Sherrod Brown had chosen to run. But, you know, I'm not sure what is more contemptuous of democracy, foisting a candidate who doesn't support Medicare for All ahead of Bernie Sanders. I mean, what are the differences between Sherrod Brown and Bernie Sanders? Why is Bernie Sanders such an existential threat to the Democratic establishment, and why is Sherrod Brown not? What are the components that, well, and again, this is actually unfair to Sherrod Brown, what I'm saying now, but in the scenario where Sherrod Brown accepts this path, somehow becomes the nominee, and is embraced by the Democratic establishment. So that fictional Sherrod Brown versus maybe the real Sherrod Brown. So I don't mean to speak contemptuously of Sherrod Brown, but there's a lot of aspects of the Democratic Party machine and apparatus that Bernie Sanders threatens, and it's my opinion that they need to be threatened, that the sort of lobbying industrial complex, the culture of the political elites represented by the Democratic establishment is rightly rejected by the Bernie Sanders supporters. These are people who sort of exist to keep people and the public out of Democratic engagement. And so I do think any such intervention, if it plays out the way that we're talking about with the arithmetic, with Bernie, with a substantial plurality, anything above 40%, Jimmy Carter, I think, had 42% of the delegates going into the 76th convention. It was different then. Not every state yet fully was operating with something that was presenting itself as transparently Democratic. As we know, though, the current system isn't so transparently Democratic, and the Democrats still have the superdelegates. But again, to steal the nomination away from Bernie Sanders in that kind of scenario, I think will have devastating consequences for the Democratic Party. And among other things, I do think it's very predictable and very likely that millions of Sanders followers will vote for instance, the Green Party nominee in November. So, yes, Sherrod Brown may win his home state of Ohio, but I do think other states will be thrown into a questionable status if that's the kind of scenario we're looking at.
Talking with Alan,
I mean, the Green Party is an institutional mess. It's a disaster. I know a lot of the activists involved. As you all know, I'm involved with Pacifica Radio. I consider the sort of like institutional mess that is Pacifica Radio to be somewhat comparable to what transpires with the Green Party. But if ever there would be a lifeline thrown to the Green Party, would be the stealing of the nomination away from Bernie Sanders. This would be extreme in the case of them doing it for someone like Michael Bloomberg. But for anybody, I would anticipate a significant portion of the Sanders movement would feel so alienated from the Democratic Party that it would almost ensure Donald Trump's election.
Well, we're talking with Alan Minsky of the Progressive Democrats of America and Chris Kasner of the Americans for Democratic Action, two of the most important and most relevant groups on the front lines in this 2020 campaign, the 100th anniversary of Gene Debs running for president from his jail cell in Atlanta. And if you want to know what the real Red Scare was, go back and look at the America between 1918 and 1920. Woodrow Wilson.
Harvey, I encourage people to watch, just Google Bernie Sanders, Eugene Debs documentary, and you will find a documentary online. Actually, I do not recommend it much as a work of cinema, but a documentary online which is narrated by Bernie Sanders about the life of Eugene Victor Debs.
Well, I got to tell you, it's my great ambition in life to make, and has been for a long time with my co-conspirator Bob Petraeus, to make a feature film like Gandhi or Lincoln about Debs. And I think I've figured out who should play Debs. I'll leave that because I'm going to talk to him soon. He doesn't know it, so I'm not going to mention it at this point in time. But
I can recommend a great film composer.
Okay, we'll get the music, absolutely. I was thinking of Pete Seeger, but he may be indisposed. So, but this article in the Times today is an article that I think we've all been anticipating. You know, the Times has been the mouthpiece, one of the mouthpieces, along with the cable networks, of doing anybody but Bernie. And, you know, they're coming to the realization
that it's not about Bernie. It's about what he stands for. And the reason that people are supporting him is because he's totally consistent, and has been for 40 or 50 years. And he's not a traditional politician. He's an activist. Comes out of the old New Left, and is a man of great integrity, and is also blessed with a certain amount of charisma. So we shall see. I am astounded that they put out Sherrod Brown's name. We knew that the Democratic establishment would come up with an alternative who's not been running. I mean, that's clear. Elizabeth Warren has her own negatives, and then you got Buttigieg, Klobuchar, and Biden, who might as well not exist at all. I mean, they're all clearly losers, and I think everybody understands that. So I've been waiting to see who they were going to come up with. I thought it was going to be Adam Schiff, but Schiff's name does not appear in this article. And the fact that Sherrod Brown does is something that we on the left are going to have to discuss, because that to me, is the scenario is right there. The Democratic establishment is going to try and stop Bernie however they can, and they would have to come up with someone.
Of money coming from corporations into the coffers of all these consultants. And, you know, look at Comcast. Comcast owns MSNBC, and if Bernie becomes president, what is the likelihood that some of these big media companies are going to be broken up, which is exactly what should happen to them, you know?
Absolutely.
Their advertising wing is going to have to be separated from their news media wing, which is the way it used to be. There might be a fairness doctrine put back into effect. So they're terrified of him, you know? And, of course, Chris Matthews is just doing what his corporate overlords, the people who pay his checks, want from him. Most people on that network, they get a salary, and they're there because they have opinions that go along with the corporate agenda.
Right, and they keep getting out of the crypt. This guy James Carville, you know, he looks like Dracula, as far as I can tell. So, you know, I mean, it's a really interesting and important turning point here, because the idea of running Michelle Obama as vice president, I mean, it's just one step away from Oprah. But you know, this is what we're looking at, and we'd be fools to not really take it seriously and to investigate and evaluate what's going to happen here. Bernie is going to get.
Well,
very
we also
close
just
to
need
50%.
To put all of our energy into making sure that Bernie gets the delegates he needs. You know, there is a scenario.
You're here.
I don't know. I'm not very hopeful about South Carolina, you know, because Biden's put so much energy into it. And, you know, I'm also astonished at the African-American vote for Joe Biden. I mean, here's a guy who really spent the first 10 years of his time in government as a segregationist and a proud one. Someone who liked to give speeches in the South and talk about how Delaware would have joined the rebels if they hadn't been blocked by Maryland. You know, he was a segregationist. He was anti-abortion, really, to a great degree, until June of this year, when he finally agreed to get rid of the Hyde Amendment. You know, he's the guy who passed that bankruptcy bill, which is why so many young people can't discharge their college debt. He's the guy who passed that terrible, terrible criminal, justice bill that criminalized, the crack cocaine was part of that thing. So many young people of color ended up in jail because of Joe Biden's legislation. He's the man who really made sure that that Clarence Thomas was not going to hear from a number of other women who could have corroborated what Anita Hill was saying. He helped push his nomination. And he's also the guy who really propelled us into war. He was the leading Democrat who was helping George Bush and Dick Cheney carry water for the Iraq invasion, which has proven to be an abysmal failure. I don't have to tell anybody.
But it's beyond a failure. I mean,
African-Americans, I guess, have been given so little in this country that their greatest hope is to find somebody that they can build be Trump, even if that person had a deplorable record on race. I mean, I'm a Jewish person. I can't imagine somebody who was like, you know, carrying water for anti-Semites at some point turning around and running for office and me thinking, oh, yeah, maybe I'll give that guy a chance. He's not as anti-Semitic as he used to be, you know?
Well, I attribute Joe Biden's status, I call it the Kim Kardashian effect. You know, I always ask, why is Kim Kardashian famous? And the reason she's famous is because she's famous. And the reason Joe Biden was considered a front runner is because he was considered a front runner. And I think he goes away. I'm not concerned about
about Joe Biden. I'm not concerned about Amy Klobuchar. I'm not concerned
about Pete Buttigieg. It's Bloomberg. It's Bloomberg we have to worry about.
It's Bloomberg versus Biden, but I don't see Bloomberg doing it either. I think Bernie is going to continue to sweep these primaries, and then we're going to deal with the realities of what the Democratic Party is going to do. And we have to remember that if we're talking about Bernie, we're talking about a great leap over both the corporate Democrats and Trump. And it has to happen at some point. The corporate Democrats, especially dating from Woodrow Wilson, have been the enemy of grassroots democracy. And I think, and I'll give it to you now, Alan, but I think that most of the corporate Democratic establishment would rather have Donald Trump in the White House than Bernie Sanders. And I think that's very clear, both ideologically and in terms of their cash flow. Because if Trump's in the White House, they don't have to do anything. They just put out the emails. Everybody's terrified, and the money pours in. If Bernie's in the White House, they actually got to do some work and deal with real social change. Alan, you want to jump on that?
Well, I'd like to say two things quickly that are really my big thoughts right now. One, of course, I can't get away from the horse race, and a lot of this discussion is about, you know, winning delegates and so on. I think it's very disturbing, the idea that Elizabeth Warren is signaling that she's going to stay until the end. While it does hold out the hope that, you know, if Warren is there and they need to keep Warren away from offering her delegates to Bernie, they do have to offer a Sherrod Brown as opposed to a Bloomberg. Clearly, if Bloomberg's the option, Warren would probably go ahead and form a partnership with Bernie. I do think Biden is more dangerous than you both are letting on. And here's a thought about Warren, though. Does Warren continue if she loses her home state to Bernie? I do think that's a result we should all look at. It does seem in the polls that she has a good path to win second in California, which would allow her to compile a good amount of delegates. But even if it's just by one percentage point, if she loses her home state to Bernie, can she really go forward? The answer, sadly, is probably yes, because the dynamic for all of these campaigns is to ride the wave from their upper middle class, professional class donors, the wave of anti-Bernie sentiment in terms of fundraising. And that goes exactly to what Cliff was saying about the money rolling in the environment with Trump, and also, you know, the big class divide that exists in the Democratic Party. We have a lot of people who have thought of the Democratic Party as their own from the professional class, and even if they're not in a day-in, day-out way involved in the Washington process, they've thought of it as this party, and they're pretty disturbed by the idea of the working class being mobilized and reclaiming the party for themselves. Now, I do want to say this lastly. My major thought about Bernie Sanders and his ascendancy, and I actually wish he had articulated this a little bit more clearly, though don't get me wrong, Bernie Sanders is a fantastic candidate, a million times better than anything I could ever imagine for myself. But when we ask the question about, is the economy doing well? And you see this all the time, the American economy is doing well. Well, if this is the American economy doing well, what has been learned by the millions of people supporting Bernie Sanders, what has been internalized is, if this is doing well, then the system has to be changed fundamentally, because it remains nothing but a debt trap for most Americans in the society, and certainly of people coming of age. So Bernie Sanders and the Bernie Sanders movement and the systemic change that he represents is here to stay until the system changes. And it's like that old ad, I can't remember what it was a car ad from when I was a kid. Are you going to deal with it now, or are you going to deal with it later? And I think the logic of Bernie Sanders is, we have to deal with this right now. And I think any other compromise is no longer appealing to Bernie Sanders' base, because this society, this economy, simply the whole idea of the American dream, or even having a comfortable life for most people coming age in this society, is gone. Yes, this is the economy doing well, but if this is the economy doing well, we need to make some significant structural changes. And that's the real wind in Bernie Sanders' sail. Was there an
Adam? Oh, my God, we're done. Well, that's a great way to end. Alan Minsky, Cliff Cashin, I couldn't have two better guests. I'm going to have you back on. This is a really exciting time, but hope, God willing, that we can pull this off one way or the other in 2020. Thank you, Gene Debs, for running for president from the prison cell in Atlanta. We'll see you next week in Solartopia.